All right, good morning. Today's daf in Brachot is daf chaf. It's a big daf. There's a lot of topics in today's daf. Whatever we can cover. Okay, the topic we are in the middle of discussing is the topic of kavanah bris, human dignity. And it's an important topic, and the Gemara says that, generally speaking, it's so important that it's going to override. Now, what exactly it's going to override, so that's what we're in the middle of discussing. And the Gemara is of what we got to so far. The Gemara discussed basically the Rabbanans. Any Issa de Rabbanan, and this, so if it's going to be a challenge between Kavanah Bris and an Issa de Rabbanan, so Kavanah Bris is going to override an Issa de Rabbanan. So examples, so we gave a couple examples yesterday. We talked about a Kohen going through a basic kvaros, but not a real basic kvaros, but going through a basic pras, which is only tumah midrabbanan. So if the Kohen have, there's any element of kavanah bris, like the Gemara gave the example yesterday of going to see a king. So if there's any element of kavanah bris, so then you go through and you violate the issa d'rabbanan over the possible violation of an issa d'rabbanan. Okay, that is where we got up to in the Gemara yesterday, and we're continuing in the Gemara. We're at no particular point. We're starting with the words tashma. It's about 10 lines on the bottom. The Amud An, Yates, Amud Beis, and the Gemara starts off tashma. V'i salamta. Now, the Torah says that if you find something lost, that you have to bend down, you have to pick it up, and you have to return it to its original owner. V'i salamta mehem pa'amim sh'ata misalem mehem u'pa'amim sh'ein ata misalem mehem. Now, the Torah says, don't ignore it, meaning that if you see something that is lost and you know that it's your responsibility to pick it up, so the Torah says, don't ignore it. Lo salamta. But on the other hand, the Torah also says, kind of intimates to us, you know, sometimes you can just ignore it. Meaning, if you read the pasuk carefully, it says vihi salamta. Now, contextually, it's not really the simple pshat in the pasuk, but still, for our purposes, we'll say it's the pshat that sometimes you could just simply ignore it, just walk right by. Haketzad. So, good. The question is obvious. When am I supposed to ignore a lost object? And when do I not ignore a lost object? Imaya kohen v'hu beves ha-kvaros. Oh, ha-yazakin v'ein lefi kvodo. Oh, shahaisam lachta meruba mishal chavero. L'kach nemar v'salamta. So we have three examples where basically you can ignore a lost item and not take the responsibility of picking it up and bringing it to its owner. Example number one, you're a kohen and the lost item is in the beves ha-kvaros. So don't pick it up. In other words, for the kohen to violate the isur of tumah, so don't pick it up, leave it there. Or zakin v'ein lefi kvodo. He's a zakin. It's just not appropriate for him to bend down and pick it up. He's too old. Or number three, malachta meruba mishal chavero. Meaning you're really busy right now, and it's just, in other words, it's you know that your time is more valuable than somebody else's time. So for you, don't bend down, pick it up. Okay. Namar v'salamta, so therefore it says v'salamta. So amai le'mein chachmei min tvun v'in etzel neged Hashem. So the Gemara now wants to know, it's a very simple question. What about kavanah bris? Meaning, this is now, we're talking about a da'araisa. The daraisa of picking up a lost item and returning it to its owner. So the Torah says, "Hashava saveda, return something to its owner." So why are we trying to figure out now? Well, sometimes you do, sometimes you don't. Kavanah bris, he's too old. It's not appropriate for him. Why are we doing all that? Meaning this, now we're on a mitzvah daraisa, and it's a daraisa. So shouldn't it just simply be bend down and pick it up, and that be the end of the discussion? So the Gemara says, okay, but here we have a drasha. It's not that we're not creating the kavanah bris exemption, it's a real drasha. So which the Gemara says, v'ligmar mineh, good, it's a real drasha. So then this should become now the precedent. So the Gemara says, yisur me'mamon lo yafina. Well, this is mamon. This is a monetary issue, and we don't learn out issur v'heter from monetary law. Monetary law and issur v'heter are compartmentalized, and they're kept separate from one another. So this may be true by monetary law, that there are times where it's eino klefi, eino mishum kvodo, it's not within his dignity to bend down and pick it up, but that's by monetary law. We wouldn't necessarily say that by issur. Tashma. So the Gemara now quotes another braisa. Ula achoso matamalomar. Now, Rashi gives us the background. This is by the Parsha of Nazir and Parsha Sota. Take a look at Rashi. Rashi writes, we're right alongside in the Gemara, Benazir Ksiv, Kol Yimei Yizira LaHashem Al Nefesh, Meis Lo Yavo. By the Nazir, he's not allowed to come into contact with Tumah. Remember, Nazir has to hold by three halachas in addition to all the other halachas in the Torah. And so one of them is he's not allowed to come into a contact with a mace. He's not allowed to become Tamei. And then the Torah says, and you're not allowed to become tummy to your father, your mother, your brother, your sister. Okay? In other words, the Nazir assumes the status of the Kohen Gadol. Kohen Gadol cannot come into contact with Tumah even of a close relative, neither can the Nazir. Da'akula b'chlal, al nefesh meifol yavol, hayu. Now, the truth of the matter is that we knew that already because the Torah already went out of its way to say that a Nazir is not allowed to come into contact with any mace. So then, v'lama yasal aviv. So then, why does the Torah then go on to articulate not to your father, not to your mother, not to your brother, not to your sister? What's going on over there? So the Gemara says, now Rashi's filling in all the blanks because we're supposed to know all this before we go into our Gemara. So la'aviv prat lemeitz mitzvah, meaning that you're not allowed to come into contact with your father if your father is dead. So the nazir cannot become tamei on account of his father, but for a meitz mitzvah, yes. And then le'imam atamalam ramishur meitz mitzvah lo itzurch demelaviv nafka v'dashle b'sifra lo moshi imay nazir ze kohen da havolah shtei kedushas afu le'imo hu delo yitama. What if he's a nazir and a kohen? So then he's still not allowed to become tamei v'matamei hu le'meitz mitzvah. But even though he's got the double kedusha of being a nazir and a kohen, he still, if there's a meitz mitzvah, I didn't explain, a meitz mitzvah is where there is a body where no one is attending to it. And so therefore it becomes now what is officially a meitz mitzvah. So you have to go and you have to get it. So, yeah, I understand that. But he's like a Kohen Gadol. He does not become tamei for a parent. So, l'meitz mitzvah. La'achiv matam alama harishai Kohen Gadol v'hu nazir. Afu la'achiv lo yitama aval matam l'meitz mitzvah. What if we can ratchet up the Kedusha? Meaning now he's a Kohen Gadol and he's a nazir. Okay? So even though he has a double Kedusha, when he comes across the Meis Mitzvah, so he tends to the Meis Mitzvah. Ula achos amatam alamar, im eino inyan zeh, teneu le'inyan l'misha olech l'shach, lishchot es pizcho. And now we can go back to the Gemara because now we're here. So now we're at the point where we darshan. La'aviv, le'imo, le'achiv, and so now we're up to l'achoso. L'achoso matam alamar, harishaya hola lishchot es pizcho v'lamo es beno, v'shama shemes la meis. So let's say this Nazir is on the way to Shech the Karban Pesach, to give a milah to his son. Not necessarily both, but in other words, the idea is that he's on route to do a mitzvah. And Shama Shemes Lameis Yachol Yachzav Yitama Amar Lo Yitama. So now he heard that he has a mace to attend to. So the Lo Yitama, it's now the time to Shech the Karban Pesach. It's time to do the milah. So in other words, since he's on route to do a mitzvah, he does not turn around and tend to the mace. Push off the mace. Yachol k'shem shein matam lahem kachin matam lameis mitzvah. Now, what about attending to a mace mitzvah? So tamala malachos alachos hu de'enu matamei ava matamei hu lameis mitzvah. But he becomes tamei for a mace mitzvah. Okay. So in other words, mace mitzvah is going to be the ultimate override. It overrides the kedusha of nazir. It overrides the kedusha of kohen. You can even put them together. It's going to override it. He can even be on route to do a mitzvah. It's also going to override it. Mace mitzvah is on the pyramid, is on the top of the pyramid. Now, what is mace mitzvah? Mace mitzvah is really a function of kavod abrios. It's human dignity in its best form. Somebody's dead and nobody's attending to it. So now you have a mitzvah to take care of it. So what the Gemara now is pointing out is, Amai, leima in chachmei mein tzvona vein etzal neged Hashem. Okay, but you're doing a mitzvah. You're shechting the Karban Pesach. You're doing a meal on your son. You're doing a mitzvah. So what do you care about kavod abrios? And again, this is a daraisa. So why should kavod abrios now take precedence over a mitzvah daraisa? So to which the Gemara says, Shani hasam dechsev l'achoso. Okay, so the Gemara says the same thing. It's a drasha. So it's a drasha. V'ligmar mineh. So if it's a drasha, so why don't we learn from this drasha? Sheva al tasa shani. So the Gemara says the following. Well, it's sheva al tasa. It's passive. Meaning he's not doing anything active. It's passive. Now, it's an important Rashi over here. And let's take a couple of minutes to go through this Rashi. So essentially now what the Gemara is telling us is the following. Up until this point in the Gemara, meaning up until yesterday's daf, our criteria for determining to what degree human dignity is going to override is by Isuri Darabanan. Now what the Gemara is saying is that the override of human dignity is not necessarily, it's not limited to just Darabanan, but it's also going to be true by Daraisas, as long as you don't have to actively violate the Daraisa. As long as it can just be done passively, that would be enough. Take a look at Rashi. We go through Rashi inside. We're on the top of Chaf Amud Aleph. Rashi writes, Sheva Tasa Shani, Dvarim Rabbi Mitir La'akor Dvar Torah, If you don't have to actively violate the Torah, but by you just simply sitting there and passively violating the Torah, so for that, Kavod HaBris can be an override. Ela Yoshev Bimkomo, Udvar Torah Ne'ekar Me'elav. So Rashi gives a couple of examples. Kigon, Tkiya Shofar Velula B'Shabbos. Okay, what happens when Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbos? So here, the rabbi said, don't blow shofar on that Rosh Hashanah. Even though there's a mitzvah to blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah, but not that Rosh Hashanah, why? In other words, can the rabbis do that? Do they have the right to uproot something from min haTorah? Sheval Tasa, yeah. If it doesn't involve you doing an action, if it's just an inaction, so then yeah. Rashi says, lulav, if Rosh Hashanah falls out on, sorry, if Sukkot falls out on Shabbos, the first day of Sukkot falls out on Shabbos, don't take your lulav and esrog, even though there's a mitzvah to do so. But again, same idea, the Chachamim can uproot something from the Torah if it doesn't involve an action. And then Rashi says something fascinating, sadin but tzitzis. And the same thing is true by tzitzis as well, meaning that that's considered an inaction. Okay, that's harder to understand. Lulav, I think it's easy to understand. Shofar, in other words, not blow the lulav, not blow the shofar, not wear the tzitzis. Harder to understand, but anyway, the kavase tuba be avamos, ava ma'ak be a dime lo, ava halovish kalayim ogro b'masa mamish. So now let's go back to the example that started this whole discussion. Remember yesterday's daf? What was the first example that we had? You discovered you're wearing kalayim. So what do you have to do? Even though you're in the marketplace, you have to tear off your clothing. Now, of course, you're going to be suffering embarrassment from doing so, but it doesn't matter. You have to take off your clothing. So now, which the Gemara says, okay, how is that not a breach of Kavod HaBrios? And the answer is, we don't care. Meaning, once you're violating an Issa D'Oraisa, Kavod HaBrios no longer plays a role. Now, in this Gemara's distinction of passive versus active, so we have to review that case and we have to ask ourselves, is that passive or active? So Rashi's making the argument now, that's active. Meaning by you wearing shatnez, you are actively violating the Torah, not passively. I know you could make the argument you're just wearing clothing. You're not doing anything out of your way, but no, Rashi says that's considered active. Shu lovsho. Now Vitumas Gufe Shahutra Lakon Lanazi Litamala Mes Mitzvah to Kama Akabi Adayim. So now Rashi's bothered by the following. Okay, let's go to the case that we just learned earlier this morning, where we had a Kohen or a Nazir or both who comes across a Mace Mitzvah. Does he become tummy for the Mace Mitzvah? The answer is yes. Okay, now let's think about this for a moment. Is that passive or active? That's actively violating the Torah for Kavod HaBrios. So you see, that's going to be a problem. Meaning, based on now the distinction we've just provided, we're almost going to get stuck. Because there's a scenario where you're actively violating the Torah, and what's that place that it's Kavod HaBrios?
But he didn't seek it, though. He didn't seek
okay, but still, he didn't look for it. But now that he discovered a Meis Mitzvah, it's there. He's actively violating the Torah, and the reason why is because of Kavod HaBrios. But how can you do that? The only thing that we allowed was only passive, not active. Okay, so you realize now the snag in this whole discussion is how do we allow the Kohen and or the Nazir to violate Tumas HaMeis when that requires an action? So Rashi writes the following. Okay, now this is tricky, this part of Rashi, but we'll try our best. Mimnei Kavod HaBrios Lav Sheva Al Tasehu Hainu Taima De Lo Garmina Minei De Hasam Lav Kavod HaBrios Hu De Dachi Lo Sase De Dei De Mi'ikara Keshenichtav Lo Sase De Tumah Lo Ameis Mitzvah Nechtav. Rashi over here offers a lamdus. Rashi says that when the Torah spoke to the Kohanim and to the Nazirim and says, don't become Tamei, Meis Mitzvah was never included in that Isser. Agreed. Agreed. Meis Mitzvah was never included in that Isser. So in other words, the Isser of the Kohen and Nazir not coming into contact with a mace is only for your family members or joining the Chevra Kedisha. But if there's a mace mitzvah, the Torah never provided an Isser for that. So therefore, there's no exclusion. It's not an issue of kavod abrios. It just happens to be the Torah never included that in the Isser. Kishem shelo nichtav al akrovim. Ava hashav aveidu pesach l'chol Yisrael ne'amar. Veitzel kavod abrios lidachos. However, when it comes to finding a lost object and returning a lost object. So, that's universal. That was spoken to everybody. So now, the idea of, under certain circumstances, not returning a lost item, well, that's only because of kavod abrios. But that's not an exclusion, that's going to be more like an exception. Okay. Okay, so that's Rashi. It's a very interesting Rashi. It's a fascinating Rashi. How, when it comes to Meis Mitzvah, Rashi says that just simply never was addressed by the Torah. The Torah, when the Torah spoke to the Kohen and said, "Don't become Tamei," it didn't include Meis Mitzvah, so therefore it doesn't have to be an exception, and it's not Kavod Abrios which is creating the exception. It just happens to be that Torah never put that into the Isser. Okay. We're back to the Gemara. All right, so that's it. That's the end of the Kavod Abrios discussion. So where do we stand on Kavod Abrios? Kavod Abrios is Docha Derabanan, so if it's just an Isser Derabanan versus Kavod Abrios is going to win out. And even by Adar Raisa, if it's Sheva Altase, if it requires you to do no action, but just passively to allow the Isser to happen, so then Kavod Abrios will override that as well. We have two examples for that, ignoring lost items, and that's it. That's going to be our only example. Because the becoming tummy for a Meser, for a Nazir, for a Kohen, that's Biyadayim. Right, so that goes to what we just learned together in Rashi. Amale Rapapa La Abaye Maishna Rishonim Disrachish Luniso Maishna Andlo Misrachish Lunisa. Okay. The segue between the Gemara that we just learned and the Gemara upcoming is not going to be so clear. Later on, I'll give a suggestion in terms of why we're moving on to this discussion. It's not my suggestion, it'll be Rashi, but let's go first through the Gemara. Rapapa says to Abaye, "I don't understand. The earlier generations, miracles happened for the earlier generations. Our generation, not so many miracles. So what is it? They learned better?" So he's arguing that's not true. Rav Papa says to Abaye, "We learn better." Now, that sounds like a very strong statement, but he backs it up. During the generation of Rav Yehuda was the student of Rav. He was the student of Shmuel. So we'll put him as the second generation of Mora. So what were they learning in the yeshivas? Baba Kama, Baba Basra, Baba Metzia. That's it. That's what they were learning in their yeshivas. The Anan, Kamesina, Shisa, Sidra. Now we went through all six Siddurim of Mishnayos. So we're learning everything, all of Torah. V'chi avamate Rav Yehuda be'uksin. Now I'm also going to tell you the following. When Rav Yehuda was learning the Masechta of Uksin, small little Masechta at the end of Taharos, difficult little Masechta, and he would be learning the Mishnah, Isha Shekaveshes Yerek B'Kedera. We have a concept. I don't want to go through all the details right now. This is a tangential point that the leaves can sometimes be a conduit of tumah, and the reason why is because when I pick up the fruit by the leaves serve as a yad, as a handle, and so therefore tumah can go. Let's say your tumah can go from you through the leaf into the fruit. Okay, because the leaf will be viewed as the handle. Sometimes leaves are viewed as a conduit, as a yad. And sometimes leaves are not viewed as a yad. When should that be? So the Mishnah says, well, if you are soaking them in vinegar, so the leaves no longer serve as a yad. And if you take a look at Rashi, Rashi says it has to do with the fact that once you're soaking it in vinegar, the leaves become soft and really it's not handleable, and you won't pick up the fruit by the leaves, and that's why the leaves lose the status of a yad. Okay. But again, he's just trying to make a point right now. They learn Uksin, they learn the Mishnah in Uksin. Amar Havai, the Rav Shmuel, Kachazin and Hacha. This is so difficult. These are like questions of Rav and Shmuel, my two Rebbeim. Meaning, I don't know what's going on in this Mishnah in Uksin, I don't understand the Mishnah. The Anan Kamasin and Uksin, Tleisa Mesifta. I have 13 yeshivas opened up learning Mesechta Uksin. Okay, so in other words, our generation, this is Rav Papa Nabai speaking. Our generation, which is, by the way, only one generation later, approximately, our generation knows more Torah and is more proficient at Kol HaTorah than the earlier generations. So now, here's what I don't understand. V'ila Rav Yehuda ki avashal v'chad misani asamitra. Now, if they had a drought during the generations of Rav Yehuda, so, and take it, going into a town and seaboard, so one of the things you do is you take off your shoes. You're not allowed to wear your leather shoes on a town and seaboard. Fine. So he takes off one shoe to about preparing himself for the Tanit Sibor, and already the rain starts coming down. Like a Kadosh Baruch Hu says, okay, that's enough. I'll bring the rain. Va'anan kamitzarin anafshein, umitzduch katsuchinan, v'leis demishkach ban. We're screaming, we're crying, we're praying, we're doing everything we can, and a Kadosh Baruch Hu is like ignoring us. Okay, so I don't get it. And our Limud HaTorah is better than their Limud HaTorah. Amalei kamai have a kamitzrayin nashaya kedushas Hashem. So I'll explain it to you, says Abaye to Rav Papa. Yeah. Our generation is not as good as being Moser Nefesh. They'll sacrifice more for Torah than we do. That's why Akash Baruch was more responsive to them. And I'll give you a story that illustrates how they're more Moser Nefesh. Rav Adab Ava, who was of that earlier generation, same generation as Rav Yehuda, he was also a student of Rav, so he saw a woman who was wearing a karvalata. I don't know what that is. But what I do know from the context of the story is that it was inappropriate to wear this in the public, and this woman wore in the public. Now, what Rav Adabarava did not know is that this woman was not Jewish. He thought the woman was Jewish, and presumably, so we'll get to his action in just a second. He made a mistake. But in the meantime, however, Savar Debas Yisrael, he thought she was Jewish, Kam Karei Mina, and he tore it off of her. Now, I know that sounds a little zealous. I get it. Okay, but still, the basic point of the Gemara is that somebody was wearing something in the market that she should not have been wearing. It was inappropriate. And so they were Moser Nefesh, meaning that they acted and reacted much stronger than our generation does. So Iglai Milsa, the Kusi, see, now the postscript to the story is, he learns that she was not Jewish, and so therefore, I guess it made it okay. Or, not that it made it okay, but he didn't have the right to then just simply take it off and rip it off of her. Shaimua barba me'azuzay, and then he was fined, and he was fined with 400 zuz, which is a tremendous amount of money. Could be the Gemara here speaking beguzma. Amalei mashimcha. So he asks her, what's your name? Amartlei mason. So she says, my name is mason. Amalei mason arba me'azuzay shavya. Oh, mason, now I understand why your name is mason. Rashi offers two pshatim over here. Number one, mason comes from the word masayim. So he says her name twice. 200 plus 200. So now you cost me 400 zuz. Or Rashi offers another pshat, mason, from the word hamtana. I should have been a little bit more patient. And I should have first figured out, are you Jewish? You're not Jewish? Okay. So anyway, but they were more Moser Nefesh. They acted and reacted more strongly than our generation does. Rashi says that could possibly be the link between this story that we just learned and the previous Gemara. What did we just learn in the previous Gemara? That if you're wearing Kalayim in the market and you learn that it's Kalayim, so what are you supposed to do? Supposed to rip it off. Tear off the Kalayim off your clothes, off your body. Even though it's going to be embarrassing and you're going to be in the marketplace, and fine. But in other words, you'd be Moser Nefesh. That's what you're supposed to do when the halacha demands. So here also, the earlier generations were more Moser Nefesh. I mentioned yesterday this idea of the Gemara we mentioned yesterday about ripping off the clothing. Who's supposed to rip off the clothing? Are you supposed to rip it off yourself, or are others who find out you're wearing shanes, do they even have the right to rip it off you? And I mentioned yesterday, it's a machlokes between the Rishonim, it's a machlokes between the Rosh and the Rambam. Rambam happens to be of the opinion that others rip the clothing off you. If you look at the two stories and you put the two stories side by side, it sounds a little bit like the Rambam, meaning, because in this story that we just learned, Rav Adab Ava tore the clothing off the woman, even though she was in the marketplace. So it does, just by the simple placement of these two stories next to each other, it does sound a little bit like the Rambam.
It sounds like Rambam goes with his own principle that the person ultimately wants to do the right thing, and you can beat them to the mitzvah.
Correct, so correct. Like, right, and even though it's an embarrassing mitzvah, but okay, right, absolutely. Okay, back to the Gemara. We're continuing. Rav Gidol hava ragel davka azav yasef hashar detvila. Rav Gidol would sit by the mikvah. So amrlu achi tvila vachi tvila, and he would say to the women who were toveling in the mikvah, "This is how you're supposed to do it, and be careful about this." And he actually gave instruction. So not to make light of a Gemara, and I'm really not, but he turned that evening into the mikvah lady, and it sounds like he did it with certain regularity. Now, to all of us in this room right now, does this sound strange? Yes, of course, very. Strange, and we can also say inappropriate. But as we discussed in the past, and today will be an excellent example of that, so to us, what is certainly inappropriate behavior, certainly is an inappropriate behavior, but to certain Amoraim who arrived at a certain Madrega, so for them it was okay. So the to which the rabbis turned to Rav Gidol and said, "Rav Gidol, are you not concerned about the Yetzahara? Meaning you're doing something which is easily going to incite the Yetzahara within you, helping women tov on the mikvah." So he says, "To me, they're white geese," meaning that I look at them objectively. To give an analogy to help us understand this better, it is really not much different than a doctor doing an examination on a male doctor doing an examination on a female. In other words, it becomes an objective moment. It's a scientific moment. So here in the Gemara, Rav Gidol says, I've arrived to that point where basically I can look at any woman in that objective way and not be aroused and not incite my Yetzahara. The Gemara's terminology over here, very similar to that in Ksuvus. Remember the Gemara in Ksuvus? Daf Yud Zayin. The Gemara over there talks about how one of the Amorayim at the Chasna took the Kala, put her up on his shoulders, and danced with the Kala while she was on the shoulders. And the Amora was not her father. And it's the same give and take. The rabbis looked at him and said, the Talmidim looked at him and said, "Rabbi, can we do that?" And he said to them, "No." Meaning, to me, they are objective. I look at them objectively. But you can't. In other words, for you it'll incite the Yetzer, and you cannot do that. So Rav Yochanan Havarago to have a Ka'azav Yasef Ashar Detfila. The Gemara tells another story where Rav Yochanan also. Now here it's a little bit different. He wasn't serving as the mikvah lady, but rather he stood in front of the mikvah.
Is this the same Rav Yochanan who's the big guy?
Yes, I'll get to that in just a moment. Amar Kisalkam Rasisov Asem Itfila Mistaklin Biv and Avale Zarad de Shapir Kavasi. And now what's going to happen is that as the women come out of the mikvah, I want them to look at me, and by looking at me now they'll have an image of beauty, and by looking at me now they're going to have produced children that are as beautiful as me. So Amale Rabban Lokam Mistifa Mar Meina Bishi. Now they say to Rav Yochanan, "Aren't you worried about the Ayin Hara?" Meaning, if you may be a very attractive man, and it may be true, but basically by drawing attention to yourself, are you not worried about the Ayin Hara? Amaluhu anamizar de Yosef ka asina, de lo shalta ba ene. I'm a descendant of Yosef. Which, by the way, we talked about in the past how Jews come from other Shvatim other than Yehuda and Binyamin. So here he says, I'm a direct descendant of Yosef. And you know, by Yosef, he doesn't worry about the Ayin Hara. Dechsiv ben paras Yosef ben paras alei Ayin. V'amar Rabbi Abba al tikrei alei Ayin elo olei Ayin. So the way, the correct way to understand the Pasuk, not the correct way, but a Jewish, and the Pasuk is, I'm above the eye. Yosef is above the eye. Rav Yosef, Rabbi Chanin, Amar me'achav yidgul arov v'kerav arat ma'dogim shabiyam. May mechasen alein ve'ein Ayin Hara sholotas behem. Avzori shol Yosef, ein Ayin Hara sholotas behem. Also, another drasha that speaks to the same idea, V'yidgul arov, Yosef and his descendants are underneath the water. They're below the radar. Right? The Rav just spoke about this last night, between Mincha Ma'ariv. So they're below the radar. So too, any of the descendants of Yosef, they're below the radar. They don't have to worry about the Ayin Hara. V'yibayzema, Ayin Shalom Ratzal, Azom Mimashi Enu Shalom, Ein Ayin Hara Shalat Esbo. Or another explanation is that anybody who doesn't look to encroach on somebody else doesn't have to worry about the Ayin Hara. But for people who enjoy things that belong to other people, they're susceptible to the Ayin Hara. And Rav Yochanan says, I just simply don't need to worry about the Ayin Hara. Now, just one more give and take in this discussion, and then we're going to go on. How come by Rav Gidol, did you notice by Rav Gidol, the Gemara wasn't worried about the Ayin Hara, And by Rav Yochanan, the Gemara wasn't worried about the Yetzer Hara. Right? By Rav Gidl, who served as the mikvah lady, the Gemara is only bothered by, aren't you concerned about the Yetzer Hara? And by Rav Yochanan, the Gemara is only worried about the Ayin Hara. So who asked this question? Strangely enough, the Bach. The Bach asked this question, who normally just makes corrections in the Gemara, Girsa corrections in the Gemara, but here he's bothered by that. And so what he suggests is the following. He says that we know in the Gemara in Tanis, Rav Yochanan had very long eyelashes. And Rav Yochanan had difficulty seeing. So therefore, when Rav Yochanan sat in front of the mikvah, so he asked the women to look at him, but he literally couldn't see the women. So therefore, there was no issue of the Yetzer Hara. Yetzer Hara really is connected with our eyes. So as long as you don't see, so you don't have to worry about the Yetzer Hara. So for him, you only have to worry about the Ayin Hara. What about Rav Gidl? So the Bach suggests that Rav Gidl, so he saw the women, but the women didn't necessarily see him. However exactly that worked. So for him, he only had to worry about the Yetzer Hara, not the Ayin Hara. Okay, that's the Bach's position. And just one last note, it is interesting how Rav Yochanan refers to himself as an attractive man. By the way, we know that to be so, right? He lifted his arm and it illuminated the room. Okay, to the best of our understanding of what that means, but in other words, he was an attractive man, and the way he enticed his brother-in-law Reish Lakish to become his brother-in-law is that Reish Lakish says, you know, you're such a good-looking guy, it's a shame you're a guy and not a girl. And he says, well, that's not a big deal. I have a sister who looks just like me. And he says, I'll give you my sister, Rav Yochanan, sister Reish Lakish. I'll give you my sister in marriage if you become a yeshiva bacher. That's how he got Reish Lakish to become his brother-in-law, got him to become frum, and got him to become his best friend for life. So we know Rav Yochanan was an attractive man. And just one last thing we're going to add, of course, is that Rav Yochanan was a very... corpulent. You're right. He was a corpulent individual. So I guess it, you know, looks is yeah. The Gemara's assumption is that the Ayin Hara issue was for Rav Yochanan, because by drawing attention to yourself, you're basically asking for more scrutiny. And so when he was asking for more scrutiny, for more people to observe him, so now it becomes more susceptible to the Ayin Hara. Okay. We start the next Mishnah. The Mishnah is on the bottom of Chaf Amud Aleph, and here we begin. Nashim v'avadim k'tan v'tur mikriya shema. Okay, so our Mishnah, which is really now, we're getting to the finish line in terms of the mitzvah of Kriya Shema. With the end of the third parak, we're going to finish the discussion of Kriya Shema. So now we talk about who's exempt from Kriya Shema. Women, slaves, and children are going to be exempt from Kriya Shema. Now, let's spend a moment talking about children. Children are exempt from Kriya Shema. What is that? So children can be broken up into basically two categories. There is a young child and there's an older child. Once you get above 13 years of age, let's just talk about boys for now. Once you get above 13 years of age, you're a man, you're an adult, and you're obligated to all mitzvahs in the Torah. So as a child, so you're basically going to be in one of two camps. Either you're higiyah l'chinuch or you're eino higiyah l'chinuch. Now if you're higiyah l'chinuch, that means that you are 9, 10, 11 years of age. I can't give an absolute number. It really depends on what the mitzvah is. But in other words, it comes to a point where you're obligated, not because you're a man yet, but simply because of chinuch. Because there's a mitzvah to impart and to educate your children to do mitzvahs. Good. So that is a child who's a gila chinuch. And then there's a child she ain't a gila chinuch. Well, the child is 4, 5, 6 years of age, so they have no obligation, not even through the mitzvah of chinuch. So when our Mishnah says that ketanim are exempt from kriya shema, so which child are we talking about? A child who's arrived at chinuch? Or a child who has not yet arrived at chinuch. So take a look at Rashi over here. Rashi says something fascinating. Rashi says, it's the second Rashi on the Mishnah, last Rashi on the page, afilu katan shehigia lechinuch, lo itila l'aviv lechanchu b'kriya shema, lefisha namatsu itam mikisha magia zman kriya shema. Even when the child is migia lechinuch, So there is no mitzvah for this child to say Kriya Shema. And why not? And Rashi says something really, really interesting. Because dad's not around during those times of Kriya Shema. And so therefore, he doesn't have to be mechanech his son. Now what's fascinating about this Rashi is that Rashi basically says, well, if dad's not around, so then there's no mitzvah of chinuch. But if dad's around, so then there's a mitzvah of chinuch. Now I know in my house, sometimes it is said, well, I'm not there, but wait till Abba gets home. Right? So, but does Rashi really mean that? In other words, that when Abba's away, yeah, it's okay, it's a free-for-all, but when Abba's home, so now there's a mitzvah of chinuch. And what I'd like to suggest is, yeah, maybe Rashi means exactly that. You know, Rashi later on in the Masechta will say, it's a famous Rashi, it's Daf Memches, Rashi says that the mitzvah of chinuch is primarily on the parent. Meaning that this mitzvah of chinuch, of educating your children, is not a chiyuv on the child, but rather it's a chiyuv on the father. So, and now why Rashi says that later on? So we'll wait till we get to the Gemara later on to discuss why Rashi says that. But Rashi says that. So in our discussion over here, it could very well be that the Rashi over here is consistent with the Rashi later on. That if the mitzvah of chinuch is primarily on the parent and not on the child, so it could be that as long as the father's around, so there's this mitzvah of chinuch. But if the father's not around, so the child himself does not have a personal mitzvah, a chiyuv, to perform mitzvahs. Okay, it could be that that's what Rashi means. We move on. We're on the top of Chaf Amud Beis. We're continuing the Mishnah. Omin ha tefillin. Now, all these people are also going to be exempt from tefillin, meaning, I should have read this line together. Women, slaves, and minors are exempt from Kriya Shema and from tefillin. V'chayavan, they're going to be obligated in tefillah, mezuzah, and birchas hamazon, the mitzvah of tefillah, davening shemona esrei, mezuzah, and benching. Now, Rabbeinu Tam strongly argues with Rashi. Rabbeinu Tam says that our Mishnah is not talking about a katan higil chinuch, it's talking about a katan she'enu higil chinuch. It's got to be. How in the world can the Mishnah say that a katan who's higil chinuch is going to be exempt from Kriya Shema? And presumably Rabbeinu Tam doesn't buy into this whole line of thinking of Rashi. Well, when dad's around, there's a mitzvah. When dad's not around, there is no chiyuv of chinuch. Okay, Rabbeinu Tam disagrees with Rashi, and he says that when our Mishnah says that a minor is exempt from Kriya Shema, it's talking about a minor shelo higil lechinuch. The problem with Rabbeinu Tam is self-evident. How do you read the next part of the Mishnah according to Rabbeinu Tam? Rabbeinu Tam says, and they're obligated in davening and in mezuzah and in benching. If we're talking about a minor that is eno higil lechinuch, so why should they be obligated in all these mitzvos? Right. That's difficult for Rabbeinu Tam, and if you would like further discussion on this, see Tosfos on the bottom of Chaf Amud Aleph, where they try to defend the position of Rabbeinu Tam. Okay, we start with the Gemara. The Gemara takes each one of our mitzvahs mentioned in our Mishnah, Kriya Shema Pshita, mitzvah seseh shazman grama. So, let's talk in the context of women. Okay, that'll make this Gemara easy, and it'll flow very smoothly. Women are for exempt from Kriya Shema, to which the Gemara says that's obvious. Isn't it obvious? It's a time-bound mitzvah. Women are exempt from time-bound mitzvahs. So, v'chol mitzvah seseh shazman grama, nashim peturus. Ma'u detem ha'ovis be'machu shamayim. Yeah, but contained in Kriya Shema is also another inyan, which is to be mekabel o machu shamayim. In fact, when you say Kriya Shema every day, you should have intent to accept upon yourself the yoke of heaven, which is basically yiras Hashem, fearing of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So that is universal. That's not gender specific. So I might have thought that women should therefore have to say Kriya Shema, because embedded in Kriya Shema is also this idea of accepting upon yourself all Malchut Shemayim. So Kamashman, the Gemara says that's what the Mishnah needs to tell us, is that women are still exempt from Kriya Shema, even though it sounds like from the Gemara they still have this idea of accepting the yoke of heaven. Min ha-tfilin. Pshita, the Gemara says, this is also obvious. So, tfilin is a mitzvah, seseh shazman grama. It's a time by mitzvah. Why would I need the Mishnah to tell me that women are exempt? Ma'u detei ma'ol ve'itkish le'mezuzah k'mash malan. Well, in the Torah, where do I find the mitzvah of tfilin? Right next to mezuzah. Women are obligated in mezuzah. I might have thought women are obligated in tfilin. That's the chiddush of our Mishnah. V'chayavim b'tfila. Now, you'll notice, the Gemara here does not start off with what word? Pshita. As opposed to By Kriya Shema, the Gemara said Pshita. By Tefillin, the Gemara said Pshita. Here, when it comes to Tefillah, to davening, the Gemara does not say Pshita. Rashi says that's important. It's an interesting Rashi. Rashi says it's really important that the Gemara doesn't say Pshita over here. Why is it so important? Because Rashi says, because when it comes to davening, davening is not a mitzvah d'oraisa. Kriya Shema is d'oraisa. Tefillin is d'oraisa. But davening is not a mitzvah d'oraisa. We're all familiar, I'm just reminding you, machlok is between the Rambam and the Ramban, whether davening Shemon Esrei every day is a mitzvah d'oraisa or a mitzvah d'rabbanan. The Rambam holds that it's a mitzvah d'oraisa. The Rambam says it both in his Minyan HaMitzvos, and the Rambam says it also in the beginning of Tefillah. Davening is a mitzvah d'oraisa. We say Shemona Esrei. Okay, the Nusach, the text of davening, obviously was put together by the Chachamim. But the idea of davening every day, that's a mitzvah d'oraisa. That's the opinion of the Rambam. The Ramban takes strong offense to the Rambam's position. The Ramban says that's not correct. Davening is a mitzvah d'rabbanan. And then at the end, by the way, you'll take a look at the Ramban inside. He does capitulate a little bit, maybe Beit Sara, maybe if it's a time of great need, so then maybe he'll yield to the position, maybe then it is a mitzvah d'oraisa, but he says davening is a mitzvah d'rabbanan. Okay, a big machlokes between the Rambam and the Ramban. Rashi over here says that davening is a mitzvah d'rabbanan, and that's why the Gemara here does not use the word pshita, because it's not so obvious. Now, what I'd like to do is I'd like to focus a little bit on this point of Rashi, meaning, because listen to what Rashi's saying. What Rashi's saying is that davening is a mitzvah d'rabbanan. Good. He holds like the Ramban. Great. And the Gemara therefore has to remove the word Pshita. Why is the Gemara removing the word Pshita? So listen to this. Because it's from Rashi's thought process. Rashi says that since davening is derabanan, so all the rules of mitzvah sese shazman grama, mitzvah sese shalo azman grama, they don't all apply anymore. And so therefore, davening may be time-bound. It is time-bound. You got to daven shacharis in the morning, mincha in the afternoon, maariv in the evening. But because it's a mitzvah derabanan, we no longer subscribe to the whole, do we look at it as time-bound, do we not look at it as time-bound, meaning, and so therefore, take pshita out of the Gemara. Because now that it's derabanan, all the rules are off, women may in fact be obligated. So now we're going to continue in the Gemara. The Gemara says, "V'chayav mitfila derachamei ninhu." So this is now the Gemara's explanation. Why are women obligated in davening? Because they need to ask for compassion from Hashem as well, right? Now the next lines of the Gemara, the Bach says, "Take it out. It doesn't belong over here." Okay, so I could read it, but the Bach says it really does not belong in the Gemara over here. What's fascinating about this Rashi is that when Rashi says that when you get to a mitzvah derabanan, it doesn't conform to the whole mitzvah esei versus shazman grama versus shalom azman grama. Take a look at the top Tosos on this Amud, and Tosos strongly disagrees with Rashi. Tosos says that's not true. Even by mitzvahs derabanan, you have to consider whether they're time-bound or whether they're not time-bound, and if they're time-bound, women are going to be exempt. Tosos says, I'll give you an example. Hallel. Saying Hallel, which is a mitzvah on Yontif, on Chanukah, on, it would have been on Purim, but we have the Gemara explains why not Purim. But in other words, Hallel is a takana de Rabbanan. Are women obligated to say Hallel? No. Why? Because it's time bound. So Tosu strongly disagrees with this whole principle of Rashi, that once it's a mitzvah de Rabbanan, we don't take into consideration whether it is or not time bound. Tosu says, I don't agree with that premise. And by the way, Tosos is easier to hear because normally when the Chachamim legislate and they create Dini Derabanan, it's Ke'en Daraisa. They like to pattern themselves after the Torah. So it's easier to hear Tosos' position than it is Rashi's. Back to the Gemara of a Mezuzah, Pshita Ma'od Detem Ahol Ve'etish L'tam Torah Kamash Malan. What about by Mezuzah? The Gemara says it's obvious. Meaning it's obvious because here Mezuzah is a Mitzvah Daraisa. We're back to our Daraisas. And it is not a time-bound mitzvah, so of course women are obligated. So the Gemara says, well, it's connected to Talmud Torah. We know that women are exempt from the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, so I might have thought that women are also going to be exempt from mezuzah. Okay, that's the Chiddush of our Mishnah. Huh?
Where do we know that from? That women are exempt from
Gemara and Kiddushin. The Gemara and Kiddushin, Chavtes, Lamed, somewhere in that area. So the Gemara and Kiddushin, it's drashas, to make a long story short. You take a look at the Rambam in Hilchos Talmud Torah. The first thing the Rambam says by Hilchos Talmud Torah is that women are exempt from the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. Okay, exempt meaning they don't have to. Pshita, the Gemara says, now benching. Pshita, the Gemara says it's obvious. Well, again, let's go through what's so obvious. Benching is not time bound. Now, yes, it's true that once you eat bread, so you're subscribed to bench within a certain time. But you can eat whenever you want. There's no time of the day that you have to eat. So the Gemara says, "Ma'od detei ma'hol v'chsiv b'seitz Hashem lachem be'erev ba'asor la'chov v'lachem ba'bok lizboa kimitzas esei shazman gram adami kamash malan." Well, I would have thought that maybe it is time bound. Maybe the meal times. There's no mitzvah to eat breakfast. I know it's healthy. I know it's good. But I might have thought that since the Torah describes the eating times of the day, it's like a mitzvah d'oraisa shazman grama. Okay. Amar v'ad barav anashim chayavos b'kiddush hayom dvar Torah. Kiddush on Friday night. So that is a mitzvah d'oraisa for women. So the amai mitzvah sesei shazman grama. Now kiddush is time bound. So hu v'chol mitzvah sesei shazman grama anashim p'turos amar abayim midrabanan. So maybe what he meant is that women are obligated in kiddush on Friday night, but only midrabanan. So Amalei Rav Avadvar Torah Kamar. Now that's very difficult because if you go back to read what Rav Adaba Ava says, he says that it's Dvar Torah, meaning it's Mina Torah. V'od Kol Mitzvah Esei Nechai Vinhu Midrabanan. And furthermore, it's a positive commandment. So we're going to say that they're going to be obligated midrabanan, positive commandments. So it is the luchos repeated once in Parshas Yisro, again in Parshas Veskanan. Once it says shamor, the other time it says zachor. Zachor is positive, shamor is negative. Kadosh Baruch Hu said the two bedibor echad. He said them out of his mouth simultaneously. We can't fathom, but Kadosh Baruch Hu can do that. So therefore, whoever is obligated in the Shemir is also obligated in the Zechira. So Amalei Ravin L'Rav Anashim Abirchus Amazin D'Oraisa D'Rabbanan. Fine. Next topic, last topic of today. Women and benching. Now women have to bench. That's a given. The Mishnah said it. Are they obligated in benching on a Torah level or on a D'Rabbanan level? L'mai Nafkamina La'afugir Rabbi Midei Chavasam. Now, what's the Nafkamina? Very straightforward. Can they be motzi a man? So let's say a woman and a man are eating together, and he simply doesn't know how to bench. Can the woman bench out loud, have the man listen, and have fulfilled his obligation? So, I amar daraisa asi daraisa mapik daraisa. Ela I amar darabon and havish ena mechuya badavar, chol she ena mechuya badavar ena motzi es harabim midech avasam. And we know the basic rule is that a one can be motzi another only if they're on the same level. If a woman's obligated in benching min haTorah, so she can be motzi a man. If a woman's obligated in benching only midarabanan, she can't be motzi a man. So my tashma, the Gemara says, come in here, ben mesamru, ben mevarach la'aviv, ve'evim mevarach la'rabo, ve'isha mevarach la'bala, aval amru chachamim, tavo me'er la'adam, she'ishto uvanev mevarachin la'am. The Gemara quotes the Mishnah, and the Mishnah says that, yes, a wife could bench for her husband, tavo me'era, meaning shame on the man for being so uneducated. But a woman can bench for her husband. Now, seems pretty straightforward. Iyamar pishlama daraisa asi daraisa mapig daraisa. Iyamar darabanan asi darabanan umapig daraisa. Now, if the woman's obligation is only to bench, is only mid darabanan, how do you read the Mishnah in Sukkah? Ula ta'amech katan bar chiyuvahu. The Gemara says, okay, I grant you that Mishnah seems pretty straightforward, but also including that Mishnah is the son, the minor son, benching for his father. Well, how did he do that? He's a minor. So you know what the Mishnah is talking about? Where the father slash husband did not eat enough to warrant a benching de araisa. To bench men haTorah, you have to be full and satiated. The achalta visavata uveirachta. The man, either the husband or the father only ate a kazayas, which means that his obligation to bench is only midrabanan. That's what the Mishnah Sukkah is talking about. Therefore, the son or the wife is benching for him because his obligation is only derabanan, and it could be that their obligation is only going to be derabanan as well.
What if What if he had eaten so much that he was Svia even with his eye?
Right, Svia, right. Svia does not an objective amount. Okay, two things to go over here at this point. The Gemara left the question inconclusive, meaning the question is very straightforward. Are women obligated to benching in the Torah? The Gemara quoted the Mishnah in Sukkah. The Gemara deflected the Mishnah in Sukkah. Inconclusive. We do not have an answer in the Gemara as to whether or not the women level of obligation for women to bench is the right of the Rabbanan. It does make a practical difference, but in the bigger picture, of course, women have to bench. That's a given. What is the Gemara's consideration when the Gemara says women's obligation to bench is only midrabbanan? Why should that be? Meaning, we understand the side of the Gemara that says that women have an obligation to bench min haTorah. It's a mitzvah min haTorah. It's not time-bound, so women are obligated min haTorah. Why did the Gemara entertain and possibly conclude that women only have to bench, women's obligation to bench is only midrabbanan? So Rashi and Tosfos both opine over here. Rashi says like this. Rashi says, well, if you read the pasuk says, "V'achalta v'savato v'irachta es Hashem Elokecha ala aretz atova asher nasan lach." That there's a clear correlation in the pasuk between benching and land. Landowners bench min haTorah, but if you're not a landowner, now landowner does not mean you yourself own land, but someone who was apportioned a land in Eretz Yisrael. So perhaps you don't bench min haTorah because benching is connected to the land. In fact, if you look at the theme of benching, right, there are three brachas of benching. I know there's a fourth at the end, but there are three brachas of benching. They are connected to the land of Eretz Yisrael. The second bracha of benching is all about the land of Eretz Yisrael. So women weren't given the land, right? When they went into Eretz Yisrael, women weren't given a portion of the land, and so therefore perhaps they don't have to bench min haTorah. Rashi, good. Good, it means you're listening. So Rashi's bothered by, what about Bnei Slavchat? So Rashi says, well, huh? I'll get to that point. Dan, you're ahead of me. So what about Bnei Slavchat? To which Rashi says, they got Slavchat's land, meaning it wasn't their land, it was Slavchat, which they inherited. We're talking about the original portion of the land of Eretz Yisrael, which is only given to men, not to women. Good, that's Rashi's opinion. Tosa says, regarding Rashi's opinion, it's hard to understand. Because if it's connected with who gets pieces of the land and who doesn't, so now Dan, who's a Kohen, so he notes, wait a second, the Kohanim didn't get a portion of the land of Israel. So according to Rashi, does that mean Kohanim don't have to bench min haTorah? And their obligation to bench is only midrabbanan? It's hard to imagine, says Tosa. Tosa says the reason why the Gemara is entertaining the idea that women are not obligated to bench min haTorah has nothing to do with land. It has to do with the nusach of benching. What do we say in benching? In benching we have bris and we have Torah. Which, by the way, it's not just the nusach of benching. The Gemara later on happens to say that if you miss those parts of benching, you got to go back and bench again. So in other words, those are intrinsic components of benching. And so Tosfos says that because of that, that the Gemara is entertaining the idea that women are not obligated in benching min haTorah. All right. I know I'm over time now, but let me just finish up to the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Darash Rav Avira Zimnan Amr Lamishmei Derav Ami V'Zimnan Amr Lamishmei Deravi Asi Amr Malachi Asharos Lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Wow, we were just here. Meaning, this was the Gemara Nida 3 weeks ago. The Gemara here asks a very similar question to what our Gemara is about to ask. Here the Malachim ask a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Ribbono Shel Olam Kaseh Besor Tzcha Shelo Yisa Panim Velo Yikach Shochad. You, God, are above bribery. You cannot be bribed. And meanwhile, V'alo Ata Noseh Panim LiYisrael. And meanwhile, you show favoritism to the Jewish people. D'chsiv Yisa Hashem Panav Elecha. It says in Birchas Kohanim that a Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to show favor to the Jewish people. Meaning that's the bracha. But shouldn't you be above that? Meaning you're not supposed to be bribed. It says so in the Torah. Amar lehem v'chilo asapanam leYisrael shechasavta lehem b'Torah v'achalta v'savata v'irachta s'Hashem Elokecha. V'heim edaktikim al atzman ad kezayis v'ad kebeitzo. Yeah, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, what do you want from me? Meaning I'm going to go above the letter of the law for the Jewish people because they do the same for me. Meaning that I told them that when do they need to bench? Only when they're full. And meanwhile, the Jewish people will bench even if they only eat a kezayis or only eat a kebeitza. Why do we give two shirim over here? Because it happens to be a machlokas later on in the seventh parak of Brachos. So the Gemara over here is just simply anticipating both opinions. But the point of the Gemara is that they'll bench even when they don't need to. They go above the letter of the law, so how can I not do the same for them? Obviously, the Gemara over here is connected to the previous one, because the Gemara previously said that when you eat a kezayis or when you eat a kebetza, you're only obligated to bench midrabbanan. But the idea is that we impose that upon ourselves. So if we go above the letter of the law, Kadosh Baruch Hu will do the same for us.